Matthew chapter 26. Matthew chapter 26. We're going to pick up at verse 31 for the sake of context. We're looking at about verse 32 or 33 when we ended last Wednesday evening, so we'll just pick up at verse 31. Remember, the context of this is following that which proceeds in the context. Jesus and his disciples partaking of the Passover meal and him instituting the Lord's Supper. In verse 31 of Matthew 26, then Jesus said to them all of you will be made to stumble because of me this night, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. Quote from Zechariah 13 in verse 7. We noted this last Wednesday evening. He says, I will strike, and we looked back in Zechariah chapter 13, and God is speaking. Jesus here declares himself to be deity by saying, I will strike the shepherd. In fact, he is the shepherd that will be struck. It is God's plan that he be put to death for the sins of mankind. And of course, the sheep will be scattered. Particularly on this occasion, his disciples, his apostles immediately. We'll see this later on in the context when he's arrested and his disciples disperse, they scatter. Verse 32, but after I have been raised, I will go before you to Galilee. I had made mention as well that this is the first of three times that he mentions after his resurrection, he will go to Galilee, and that's where his apostles will see him. And in fact, that's what takes place. The Gospel of Matthew ends with that taking place, Matthew 28, about verse 16 and following, with them meeting the Lord in Galilee. In verse 33, Peter answered and said to him, even if all are made to stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble. So even if all, I had mentioned last Wednesday evening as well that Peter seems to speak as though he knows the hearts of all. Of course, he does not. His confidence in his faith is going to get him in trouble because he seems to be arrogant in regard to it. Even if all are made to stumble, but all will not be made to stumble, no more than he will, even though they're all going to say the same thing in just a moment in verse 35. Even if all are made to stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble. And Jesus said to him, assuredly I say to you that this night, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. This night, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. Now, we could take time to go and look in Mark's account and Luke's account, Mark chapter 14, Luke 22, and we could also look in John's account in John 18 about this rooster crowing, because there's some significance in this. It might seem like it's easy to read over. Assuredly, I say to you, this night before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. Before the rooster crows. Well, there's a difference in what Matthew records in regard to the rooster crowing and what Mark records. And we'll just look at Mark 14, if you will, Mark 14 and verse 30. This is just a point of interest that we need to know about so we can see how the scriptures fit together. In Mark 14, in Mark's account, in verse 30, and Jesus said to him, assuredly I say to you that today, even this night, before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times. Before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times. Well, we see he adds the word twice here. Well, Luke doesn't add the word twice, I don't believe, if I remember correctly, nor does John in John's account. They just say when the rooster crows. What is under consideration is they had two occasions when the rooster would crow. A rooster might crow from midnight to 3 o'clock in the morning. That's the first rooster crowing. And that's why Mark mentions the rooster crowing twice. And then the second rooster crowing is from 3 o'clock in the morning to 6 o'clock. And so the rooster's going to crow, that which is under consideration in Matthew's account, Luke's account, and John's account, is the rooster will crow, you will deny me three times. Assuredly I say to you that this night before the rooster crows, before he crows the first time? No, before he crows the last time. So right before sunrise, the rooster is going to crow, you know. And so Peter has denied him three times by that time. And that's what's under consideration. They had two different times, and that's why Mark mentions twice. If you ever lived on a farm, you know an old rooster liable to crow before daylight is ever seen. Everyone, well, they do, and that's why Mark put twice, for the rooster crows twice. So he would crow perhaps sometime around 3 o'clock in the morning, but right before sunrise he's going to crow again, and that's the second crowing. And when it's mentioned the rooster crowing once or twice, if the scriptures talk about the rooster crowing once, just think about the time frame and the way they broke the watches down in the night from midnight to 3. That would be the first time in which a rooster would crow. And then the second time would be from 3 to 6, sometime in that time frame. And so that's why they put the twice in Mark's account. So right before sunrise is what's under consideration. When no times of the rooster crowing, that is twice or first, and it just says the rooster crowing, we can always understand it as being the last time he crows. That is right before sunrise. Verse 36 of Matthew 26, or 35, Peter said to him, "Even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you." And so said all the disciples. So even if I have to die with you, remember Peter and the other apostles still thinking in their mind that Jesus is the Messiah. That is, he's going to be an earthly king. That he's going to rule and reign on David's throne. He simply has not yet taken the initiative, you might say, to raise an army. He hasn't taken an initiative to identify himself as an earthly king, but they seem to be waiting. They seem to think that in some way they're going to have to fight and perhaps die in order to bring the kingdom into existence. That is, with him being the Messiah, or the king reigning over the kingdom. But Peter, as well as the other apostles, they simply do not understand the nature of the kingdom. And so when they come to arrest Jesus later on in our context, Peter is going to be the one who draws a sword. He's willing to die. He certainly was willing to die, because he could have died on that occasion. He was willing to die, and he showed himself that he was willing to die, but he wasn't willing to surrender, because that's what the Lord did on that occasion. He surrendered himself up to those who came to arrest him. He just gave himself up into their hands, because that was God's plan. But Peter didn't understand that. He didn't know that. And so he was willing to give his life, and it seems as though he was sincere about that when he drew his sword. Verse 36 of Matthew 26, "Then Jesus came with them to a place called Gethsemane and said to the disciples, 'Sit here while I go and pray over there.' So Jesus came to them." Earlier, he had gone out to the Mount of Olives, verse 30 of chapter 26, after they left the city of Jerusalem. "And when they had sung a hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives." So we know that this place in Gethsemane is at the Mount of Olives. We also know that because of the other gospel accounts as well. Jesus and with the apostles came to this place called Gethsemane. Literally, the idea of the name of the place is that of an olive press. So that gives us some indication that it's perhaps an olive garden. As we learn in the other gospel accounts, it was a garden across the Kidron Brook. And so it was perhaps at the base or just on the side of the Mount of Olives, not far from the city of Jerusalem itself. And we learn from the other gospel accounts as well that they often went to this particular place, that this was a place that they went to from time to time. And so they were familiar with it, as well as Judas would be later on. He would know where they're located. Then Jesus came with them to a place called Gethsemane and said to his disciples, "Sit here while I go and pray over there. Sit here." We learn from the other gospel writers as well that they entered this garden of Gethsemane, which indicates that it must have been walled in or fenced in some way. So they entered into it, and evidently close to the opening somewhere, Jesus left part of his disciples there, part of his apostles, but he took with him Peter, James, and John further into the garden itself. They're not named here in this account, but they are in the John's account. And he took with him Peter and two sons of Zebedee, James and John, not named, but identified simply as the sons of Zebedee. And he began to be sorrowful and deeply distressed. He began to be sorrowful and deeply distressed. So he's greatly disturbed. Greatly disturbed. Someone might say he's discouraged. I don't think he's discouraged, but he is filled with sorrow and great distress on this occasion. Grief has filled his heart, you might say. And one might wonder, well, why is that? Why is he so sorrowful? Is it because he is God in the flesh? That is, he is man as well. And is he feeling the pressure of having to give his life for the sins of mankind? Or is he sorrowful for another reason? Is he filled with sorrow and deep distress because he knows what's going to take place in the wee hours ahead? Remember, by this time, when they left Jerusalem after institution of the Lord's Supper, it was already Friday. Remember, the Jewish day started at 6 o'clock in the evening. So they partook of the Passover meal from Thursday evening to the beginning of the day on Friday. It would have been Thursday night, the way we count our time, but the day Friday had already started. But we don't know how much time has elapsed and how long they stay in the Garden of Gethsemane, but some time evidently had elapsed, because later on, it's going to be late in the night. So they're here for some time, and he's filled with sorrow and grief and deep distress. Then he said to them, "My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, filled with great grief, even to death." Even to death. The idea is, sometimes we say this, well, you know, if we've lost a loved one, it seems as we might say, well, my heart is aching. I feel like I'm dying. And that's what he's saying here. He's filled with great, great grief, exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Even to death. It feels like he's going to die because of it. And he said, "Stay here and watch with me." So he tells Peter, James, and John, "Stay here." Now, Peter, James, and John are chosen on this occasion, as they were on other occasions, like when they went up on the Mount of Transfiguration. There had to be witnesses to what transpired, what took place. That may be why Jesus chose three, but also when he raised a young lady from death as well, he took Peter, James, and John with him on that occasion, perhaps to verify and validate what had actually taken place. But Peter, James, and John evidently was very close to Jesus, and he often chose them. Other than that, we simply do not know why he would choose them over the other apostles. But he said to them, note this, he said to them, "Watch with me." Watch with me. First of all, the word "watch" itself simply means to stay awake. The Greek word does. So is he telling them to stay awake with me? The word means to stay awake, but it also carries the idea of stay alert, be vigilant, be watchful. And I think even though they're going to be sleeping, I think what he's actually telling them is to be alert, be watchful, be vigilant, because in a little while he's going to tell them that they ought to be praying lest they fall into temptation. And so he's using this word, stay awake, not literally to tell them to stay awake, because if they would stay awake, they could be vigilant, watchful, and attentive, lest they fall into temptation. And the word itself could be used in both ways in the text, since they are actually going to go to sleep. But he's not there for the purpose of just staying awake. He's there for the purpose of bringing his sorrow and grief before his Father. And that's why he has separated himself a little way. Verse 39 of Matthew 26, he went a little further and fell on his face and prayed. He went a little further. One of the gospel writers says he went a stone's throw away. So he's not very far away from Peter, James, and John, but he went a little further away from them, and he falls on his face to pray. If you could picture in your mind him dropping to his knees and bowing his face to the ground. That was the posture of prayer during this particular period of time. Many in the East still do that. We see a lot of the Muslims and others doing that, sometimes on TV, prostrate on the ground. And so that's what he has done on this occasion. So he went a little further and fell on his face and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. O my Father. I believe it's Mark, maybe Luke, I forget which one now. But the word that is translated Father here, they render by the Aramaic term, Abba. It's a term that showed very closeness, very intimate relationship, as a young child would call to his father, Abba, Abba, Father, Father. And so he says, my Father, my Father, a very intimate relationship, and he's calling upon him on this occasion, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. In Mark's account, he says, all things are possible. All things are possible with the Father. Here he says, if it is possible. Well, all things are possible for God, regardless of what it is. Here Jesus says, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. The cup under consideration, as we'll see, involves his arrest, his persecution, and his death. Not to mention all the affliction that he's going to have to undergo. That's the cup that is under consideration. But when he says, if it is possible, and as Mark's account says, all things are possible, let this cup pass from me, pass by, pass away, the other gospel accounts say. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. Just kind of a side note, Jesus says he has a will, and his Father has a will. For those in the religious community who believe that God and Jesus are the same person, here's a good passage to bring to. Jesus says he has a will and God has a will. There can't be the same person. Both of them has a will. Both of them express that will. God's will, his desire, is expressed in his word. Well, it was God's will that Jesus come to this earth. He sent him to this earth to suffer and die on the cross for man's sins. That's the will of God. We can go back in the Old Testament and read several occasions where God expressed that will. Isaiah 53 is one good place. God expressed his will in regard to the plan to save all men in Christ Jesus, and Christ was supposed to die on the cross. Isaiah 53, verse 12. And so that's God's will in the matter, that he die. But now it seems as though Jesus is saying, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Some take this under consideration to be, well, now Jesus all of a sudden has become a coward. He knows that he was sent into this world to suffer and die on the cross for the salvation of man's sins. But now he's asking God, if it's possible, don't let this take place. I want to suggest to you that's not what he's doing at all. That's not what he's doing at all. The cup itself, there's some portion of this cup. This cup, again, has to do with his arrest. We'll see later on when he's arrested, Jesus mentions this cup to Peter at the occasion in which he's arrested. And so we know that it has to do with his arrest. We know that it has to do with his trial and his persecution and his death even. But there is some portion of that cup, and the ideal of the cup is not a literal cup. No doubt Jesus mentioned the cup here because there was a cup mentioned in institution of the Lord's Supper. The word cup is often used in the Old Testament. When you go back, God's wrath sometimes is spoken about being poured out of a cup. The Calvinists see God's wrath here being poured out on Jesus Christ in the cup. Well, God's wrath is not being poured out on Jesus Christ. That's not what's under consideration. But there are other things that cup is symbolic of. That is the contents of the cup. Jesus is given this cup to drink. This cup to drink. And this cup has in it his arrest, his trial, his persecutions and afflictions, and his death. And there are different aspects of all of those things in this cup, and Jesus has the responsibility of drinking all of this. The idea, some express, let this cup pass, let this cup pass away, let this cup pass by. During this particular period of time, sometimes prisoners, those who were going to be put to death, were given poison to drink. And if you were in a line of prisoners who were going to be put to death, and the king decided, well, let the cup pass. You lived. The cup was passed to the next fellow without you having to drink it. Some see that symbolism in it. Whether that's in it or not, I'm not sure, but it might be why the words pass away and pass by is used. But he's praying here for some particular thing to change that can be changed. Because up to this point of time, we noted earlier that on four separate occasions, Jesus has prophesied of his death to come. The latest, all of you will be made to stumble because of me this night, for it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. Jesus knew that he was going to be put to death. He had told his apostles on other occasions, I'm going up to the city of Jerusalem. There I'll be delivered over to the hands of the authorities, and I'll be delivered up to be crucified and be put to death, but I'll rise from the dead the third day. So he told them this on several occasions. He knows what he's going to have to go through, but there's some aspect of this in this cup that Jesus is asking God. In this prayer, he says, if it is possible, and Mark's account says, all things are possible, let this cup pass from me. There's some aspect of this cup. He's not saying, I don't want to die for the sins of man. He knows he's going to die for the sins of man. As a matter of fact, he says, not my will, but your will. He wants God's will to be carried out. But there's some aspect of this that through the providence of God, God can act to maybe shorten the time that he spends on the cross, maybe lessen the affliction and the persecution that is heaped upon him. There's some aspect that Jesus is asking God to help him with. Later on, we see in John's account that the angels come and minister to him, as if God has responded in prayer to him and strengthened him that he might be able to go through this. So those people who say, well, he's really praying to get out of this. No, he's not praying to get out of this. He wants to do the Father's will. But there's some aspect of this that through the providence of God, it can be changed. And so, and the reason I mention this, because some think that he's saying that he wants this to be, he wants it changed. That is, if he's praying that God's plan to bring about salvation through his sacrifice on the cross be changed in some way. No, he's not really praying for that. He's intending on carrying out the will of God. Not as I will, but as you will. The point is, God's will sometimes can be changed. Remember when Moses came down from Mount Sinai and the people had formed the golden calf? Well, what was God going to do? Well, he was going to destroy them. Moses interceded on their behalf and changed God's will. Same thing took place. Zechariah, remember, God had condemned him to death. Zechariah prays to God, and God changes his will and allows him to live a while longer. And so God's will can be changed if it is possible. If it is possible, since it is possible, because Mark's account says all things are possible. Those are Jesus' words. That's the way Mark renders it. All things are possible. And since all things are possible, then here, if it is possible, indicates that it could have been possible. Jesus is not praying contrary to the will of God. If he was, he'd be sinner.
The fact of the matter is here, it was not possible for three reasons. The salvation of humanity would have been lost, number one. And number two, the purpose for which Christ came into the world would have been defeated. And number three, the will of God himself would have been defeated.
Well, it was not possible, you're right, for none of that to take place. All of that was going to take place. But it was possible for some aspect. It was possible for something to take place. Because it says in Mark's account, Mark 14 and verse 35, he went a little further and fell on the ground and prayed that if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. If it is possible there, let Luke's account. Maybe it was Luke that said that. All things are possible.
Jesus was fully God and fully human. I think his pure humanity was coming out in this case.
Well, indeed, his humanity did have something to do with it, but you got to think about it. There's been many a man face death and faced it courageously and boldly. It seems as though Jesus is not doing that on this occasion. If that's what's happening, if his humanity just takes over and all of a sudden he's weak-kneed now and he don't want to face this, he don't want to go through it, I don't think that to be the case. I don't think he was cowardice. I don't think his humanity took complete control of him and made him not want to go through this, because there's been many a man who's faced death with boldness and courage, even in the face of death. And so I don't think that to be the case. No, that God's plan to save man through his death on the cross could not be changed. It could not be changed, but Jesus was praying for something, and we're simply not told what that was. Luke 22, Verse 42, Father, if it is your will, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but your will. Where did I read that? Was it in John's account? All things are possible? No, but I just didn't.
Mark.
Say again?
It's Mark.
It's Mark. What verse?
Verse 36, the next verse.
Verse 36. Mark 14, verse 36. Mark 14, verse 36. Okay, I didn't read the right place then. Mark 14, 36. Abba, Father. There's that term, Abba. Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. So it was possible. And so Matthew's account says, if it's possible. We just noted a few moments ago, is verse 35 of Mark 14 says, if it were possible. But verse 36 says, all things are possible. So it's not if it's possible, it's just since it was possible, because Jesus said all things were possible with the Father. And since all things are possible, he says, take this cup away from me. Was it possible for God to take this cup away from him? It wasn't possible for God to destroy his plan to save man through the sacrifice of Christ on the cross. That wasn't possible. But what was possible was some part of this cup that we don't know about. That's what was possible. And what that part was, I don't know. There was some part of this cup, though, some aspect of this cup that was possible to be, through the providence of God, to be changed. All right, moving on before we run out of time. Then he came to his disciples and found them asleep and said to Peter, what, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Now, why do you think he spoke to Peter with what he said and didn't say James or John?
Because Peter was the one that was overconfident.
Yes, Peter is the one that had expressed that confidence and arrogance earlier, so he says to Peter, he came to his disciples and he found them asleep. And he said to Peter, what, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Could you not stay awake with me 1 hour? Or could you not be vigilant and give attention for 1 hour? Now the 1 hour, some take the 1 hour here to be a literal 1 hour. And they said, well, he spent that long in prayer the first time. But the phrase 1 hour could simply mean a short period of time. And that might be what he's saying to Peter. Could you not watch with me 1 hour? Even a short period of time? Could you not be awake? Remember, they've just gotten up from the table and they've gone out, and evidently it's been a long and stressful day, and sleep has simply overtaken them. Verse 41, he said, watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation. Watch and pray. That's why I think the word watch means more than just more than just stay awake. Stay awake and pray? No, be attentive, be vigilant, be on guard, and pray lest you enter into temptation. Because they're going to have the temptation to forsake the Lord. They're going to have the temptation to flee. They're going to succumb to that. And so they need the strength. Jesus is praying for it. They need it as well. Watch and pray lest you enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. Spirit indeed is willing. That is, the spirit of man is indeed willing. Willing means eager and ready. Like Paul was ready to preach the gospel at Rome. Same word. So the spirit is willing. People come to the worship service. Their spirit is willing. They're ready. They're eager to worship God. But because they didn't get any sleep the night before, the flesh is weak, and they're overcome by sleep. It might be because they're on medication or some other reasons. But the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. And that's what Jesus is saying, you know. They're allowing the flesh to overrule the spirit on this occasion because the flesh is weak, not able to maintain itself. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. He went away again a second time and prayed, saying, O my Father, if this cup... Now note this. It's worded differently. The indication in this is Jesus knows the answer to the prayer that he prayed the first time. If this cup cannot pass away from me unless I drink it, Your will be done. If this cup cannot pass from me, unless I drink it, your will be done. He's going to drink it. It's God's will that he drink it, and it is the will of Jesus that he does it as well. We'll see later on in the context that to be the case because of what he says when they come to arrest him. And he came and found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. Their eyes were heavy, like having stones on their eyes. They just pull them down with weight, or a heavy burden on their eyes. Their eyes were heavy. Verse 44, so he left them, went away again, and prayed the third time, saying the same words. Then he came to his disciples, and he said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. So are you still sleeping and resting? Yes, they were. He came back, they were still asleep, and they were resting. Behold, the hour is at hand. Now, I didn't mention this when we noted the cup, but if you look in Mark's account, the cup and the hour are used synonymously. So here it is. Here, kind of mentioned several verses separating it, but when you look in Mark's account, the term the hour is at hand, the cup is at hand. It's time to drink the cup. It's time for him to be arrested. It's time for his trial. It's time for his persecution, affliction, time for his crucifixion. That's the hour. That's the cup. Behold, the hour is at hand. The cup is here. It's time for me to drink the cup. And the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of, note this, sinners. Being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Of course, those who came after him were indeed sinners. They were hypocrites. But the term might have reference to the Romans later on, the Gentiles. They were often referred to as sinners. Verse 46, rise, let us be going. See, he who betrays me is at hand. He's here. Jesus knew what was taking place. He knew every step of a way what was transpiring, what was taking place. And we'll see that as we continue further in verse 47 next week. Matthew 26, verse 47. Questions or comments? Thank you very much for your kind attention tonight and your good comments.